You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, a fascinating day. This morning, President Obama caught a fainting woman standing behind him. Did you catch that? He then said, this is what happens when I talk too long. He was up on the stage talking about Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, excuse me. And how, you know, he was a little upset that the website wasn't working quite the way it was supposed to. You know, we need to be very clear about why that website is not working the way it's supposed to. And the website is not working the way it's supposed to because a whole bunch of Republican states said, we're not going to set up our exchanges. And so it was supposed to be just a portal, just a pass-through point to all each individual, because every state has different insurance standards. They have different carriers who are offering plans. There are differences in those plans. They have different eligibility rates for Medicaid and, you know, for subsidies, different poverty, all these kind of things. I mean, it's every state has this huge collection of database stuff. And you've got, you know, about 30 states, Republican-run states that said, screw it. We're not going to do it. And so the federal site, and keep in mind, the Republicans shut down the government last week and the week before and cost us $24 billion. The federal website has only had about $200 million spent on it. That's two-tenths of $1 billion. Now, before the shutdown, Boehner was saying, we got to shut down the government to stop Obamacare. It's so bad. Now Boehner is saying, people want Obamacare so much, but they can't get it. The website is bad. So we should criticize the Democrats and the administration for having a bad website. So let me get this straight. You spend $24 billion shutting down the government, and now you're complaining that a $200 million website, two-tenths of $1 billion, doesn't work the way it's supposed to? Because 30 of your colleagues in the states have said, we'll leave it to the feds. It's working fine in Connecticut. It's working fine in California. It's working fine in Kentucky, of all places. Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul's hometown. So it's just one of those very, very, very strange goings on. By the way, Rich Trumka today came right out and said, any Democrat who votes to cut Social Security, which would be the chain CPI that they're talking about, the AFL-CIO is going to work to, let me give you the exact quote. This warning goes double for Democrats. We will never forget, we will never forgive, and we will never stop working to end your career. So, you really want to crawl into bed with Mr. Simpson and Mr. Bowles? David Selig is on the line with us, conservative commentator, pro-business advocate. His website is truetaxhelp.com. And, David, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom. I'm starting to get the feeling whenever you need a whipping boy, you give me a call.
I wasn't thinking of it in those terms. I thought you might be able to bring some light to this and share with us the conservative perspective on Obamacare. I'm a little confused. First of all, it was an existential threat to America that was so bad it was worth crashing the world economy over. And now the complaint seems to be the website doesn't work as well as it should.
Right.
In fact, I mean, this is like, a verbatim quote from John Boehner, actually. Let me just share these two quotes with you really quickly.
Sure.
He said, I'm appalled that Obama, this was a month ago, September. I'm appalled that Obamacare exists. And now he says, I'm appalled that people aren't. Actually, this isn't a quote. It's a paraphrase. He's complaining about the website. So, what is the emerging and evolving conservative and Tea Party position, and are they at odds?
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, it is a cold day in hell when I am going to defend Boehner. You know, I get the feeling he, walked off of the set from Mad Men or such. I have a hard time following his argument.
Well, he does have a cigarette and a cocktail, you know, in each hand,
right.
at most times.
One of the things that I have an issue with, can we call it Obamacare? That's all right.
Sure.
is that it really screws the young people of America having to carry our burden. I mean, you and I, Tom, we're successful. We're older white men. You and I are financially successful. And yet, we're asking these young men and women, they're just getting out of college, they have onerous debts and obligations, to pick up our slack. So, you know, if over the fullness of time we've developed a medical problem or something of the kind, that they pay for us. And that doesn't seem right to me. And if they don't pay for us, we're going to give them a penalty, a financial kick in the patoot. The segment of our society that can least afford it, they got to carry our water. For what? What did we ever do to make these people?
Well, we're actually, you know, speaking in just in the very personal you and me, as I'm assuming that, you know, we're both people who pay, probably have a little more than the average income and therefore pay a little more than the average in taxes.
Sure.
We're going to be paying for our health insurance, whereas those young people that you're talking about who might just be starting out, they're making little enough that you and I, through our taxes, are going to be picking up the cost of the subsidies so that they can get health insurance for very, very little.
Penalized. If they don't flip the bill, they're going to have penalty.
Come on,
this
David.
Is like Robin Hood in reverse.
Oregon is signing people up left and right. My three kids live in Oregon, and their friends who are not making a lot of money are looking at these programs. Hey, I can get free health insurance. I can get health insurance for $100 a month. I mean, this is a good deal. But there's a larger question here, David. You and I both also pay taxes to support the local fire department.
Sure.
And, you know, thank God, knock on wood, my house has never caught on fire. I'm assuming yours hasn't. It's pretty rare. And yet we still continue to pay for it. Is that unfair?
No, Tom, but that's not a fair comparison, and you know it. The fact of the matter is, let's set aside the people who are going to benefit from the program, get the low-cost insurance. Let's talk about the tens and thousands of these young men and women who are going to have to pay the penalty, and the government. These government bean counters have figured out all the millions and billions of dollars.
Well, come on, David. You are a tax consultant. You know that the IRS is not going to be enforcing that penalty, first of all.
They are going to enforce it. Contrary, Pierre.
And secondly, it's only $200 for the first year, right?
Yeah, that's today.
And thirdly, that's only if you're stupid enough to take the Koch brothers' advice and not buy health insurance.
Oh, wait a minute.
Even if you can get it for free.
I don't think we should insult.
But David, back to my fire department. I mean, if you're okay paying for a socialist fire department because you think that we should put out people's houses when they catch on fire, shouldn't we be just as concerned about somebody's body having a crisis as somebody's house? Shouldn't we all be collectively paying into a health insurance program that takes care of people's bodies when they do the equivalent of the house catching on fire when they get cancer or an infection?
Yeah, Tom, but why do we have to penalize 20-somethings?
We're not.
Enough debt and problems? Sure we are.
Any 20-something, well, you know, I mean, I get it that there are some 20-somethings who are already internet billionaires, and they're going to pay, you know, the full load. But a 20-something who's just starting out, who's making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, even $30,000 a year, is going to get health insurance for, in most states, free or close to free.
And if they don't, they're going to pay a penalty so you and I can enjoy something.
So they should do it. They should sign up, and we should be helping them instead of sitting on the sidelines throwing stones at it.
I'm not throwing stones, and you know it, Tom. The other thing, and I've mentioned this to you before that I really took offense with, is the shady accounting tactics they used to try to pass this bill of goods.
Well, that's because the Republicans demanded that it be revenue neutral. It actually reduces the deficit, so that's why they had to spread out the rollout over 3 years.
Anyway, is that the wrap-up music, or do I have a moment?
No, that's the wrap-up music. But I, you know, David, thank you very much for the call. Thanks for being with us today.
I'm happy out in D.C. Conversations with great minds.
Thank you. TrueTaxHelp.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
David Seelig, TrueTaxHelp.com. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Andrew Campbell on the line with us, senior producer with The Big Picture. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So the Tea Party crashed the Obamacare website, and all I got was this stupid T-shirt.
Yeah, we're going to start off talking about the recent debacle over the Obamacare rollout. President Obama had a speech in the Rose Garden this morning where he was touting the rollout. He was talking about the numbers. Some 20 million people have logged onto the site. It seems to be working great. The state exchanges, anyway, seem to be doing their job, and a lot of people are signing up. But we're really going to talk about how this really, the crashing of the website, and really how the bumpy rollout we've seen has been spurred on by the Tea Party.
Yeah. It's this is, yeah. And that was kind of my opening rant here on radio, too. And we'll revisit that a little more in just a minute. Meanwhile, France and Mexico are both following in, I'm forgetting her name, the president of Brazil, but when she discovered that her emails had been hacked, her personal emails, correspondence with friends and family, she was so seriously PO'd that she canceled either a trip here. I think it was a state dinner. She was invited to D.C. for a state dinner with the president.
Yeah, and she canceled at the last minute because of the newest leaks.
Now the president of Mexico and the president of France have discovered the same thing. And Jesselyn Raddick is going to be on about this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we'll have her on. These are the newest to come out of the Edward Snowden leaks. Basically, there is information that the NSA was spying on French phone calls and also looking at the email of the Mexican president. And while this is concerning that so much spying is going on, it also raises the question, though, is this just the day and age we live on? Should we expect that world powers are going to spy on other world powers? So we'll get into that.
Yeah, and my take on this is that, A, I want my spy agency to be spying, particularly on people who are potential enemies, but I understand spying on your friends as well. But, B, I'm very concerned that 70% of the NSA budget has been privatized, and when you see things like private prisons, what do you get? You get lobbying for and even advertising for, you know, laws that are going to create more prisoners. And when you privatize spying, you're going to get a lot more spying than you need. And it might be, I think, in cases like this, ultimately under counterproductive spying. It seems to me that the privatization of our spying is the big issue that we need to be talking about, that nobody is talking about. And, of course, you know, the corporate media is not going to talk about it because they want to privatize everything. They've already privatized the media.
Right.
Anyhow, the New York Fed is trying to wrap up this deal. J.P. Diamond, $13 billion. You know, I would guess if I walked into my local 7-Eleven with a gun and said, give me $13 billion, and somehow they managed to do it, that I would go to jail. You think Jamie Dimon's going to go to jail?
No, Jamie Dimon is not going to be going to jail. Jamie Dimon's going to be sitting pretty in his corner office on Wall Street like he has been for these past few years. I mean, it just seems that hit after hit these banks can take, and yet the top-level executives, the Jamie Dimons of the world, still make out pretty.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. Anyhow, Richard Eskow is going to drop by, the senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future, to talk about this. And be sure that the setup for that, Andrew, includes that mention of the November event that they're having, okay?
Absolutely, Tom.
Okay. And then we're going to get into the cost of the true cost of carbon with Maggie Fox in Block C, and in Block D, Everything You Know Is Wrong. It should be interesting. Andrew, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be right back. Past the hour, you need to know this. Obamacare is working just fine. Yeah, you heard me right. Obamacare is working just fine, at least in the states that aren't run by the Tea Party. Now that the shutdown's over, the media has moved on to their next manufactured controversy. You know, we have media by spectacle, right? They got to have a spectacle. They didn't get their war in Syria. That would have been a great spectacle. Might have lasted a year or so. The spectacle before that was George Zimmerman. That was a nice spectacle. Oh, they had that short spectacle of the guy who kidnapped and raped the three women for 10 years. But that spectacle went away. He died. They had the spectacle of the shutdown, which they extended for two whole weeks by not telling Americans that if John Boehner just took a vote on the clean CR, it would have been over. So, the kabuki dance continued. The next manufactured spectacle is going to be, oh, my God, the health exchanges aren't working right. Healthcare.gov doesn't work, right? I mean, right after the exchanges opened on October 1st, the newspapers and TV networks started talking about problems with the website. Sort of like Windows 8, right? Stories about healthcare.gov kind of fell into the background because of the shutdown, but ever since the shutdown closed up, you know, the president signed that bill to reopen the government last Thursday. The cable news, this, they've decided this is going to be their new spectacle. Ah, the website isn't working. So much so that the president had to come out today and give a speech and talk about it and say, nobody's angrier about this than me, and therefore, you know, things are, heads are going to roll and things are going to get done. And I don't think he said heads are going to roll, but you get the point. And some of the problems, you know, frankly, were pretty bad. Healthcare.gov was crashing. It was running slowly. It was sometimes giving users bad information about tax credits and things like that. So predictably, Fox News has jumped on these problems to make it seem like Obamacare is doomed. We couldn't kill it, so we're going to report on its death. Well, you know, healthcare.gov's problems are embarrassing, and the Obama administration does need to fix them, and they did apparently a fairly major patch over the weekend. But here's the thing, and this is pretty amazing. Lost in all the very justified talk about how screwy the site is any talk about why the website is so screwy and who made it that way. I mean, remember, the healthcare.gov website was meant to be a portal. You know, it's like you go to Google and you say Civil War. Google doesn't then tell you about the Civil War. It points you out to other websites that tell you about the Civil War. Well, similarly, healthcare.gov was supposed to be a portal. You go to healthcare.gov and you say, here's my Social Security number, here's my address, and I live in Nevada, and it would confirm that you were actually a citizen and that you do live in Nevada, and then it would send you to Nevada's website. It was just supposed to be a portal, like Google. It was never designed to bring together a bunch of different insurance policies and put them all in one spot. So when the government first set up the federal exchange system, it thought the states would, you know, cooperate, set up their own exchanges. So the healthcare.gov's portal would verify people's citizenship and eligibility, sort of the way Google verifies that you're actually on the internet and you've actually asked that question, and then hand them off to the website of the state that they live in. And then that state's website would have its own unique database reflecting the different state standards for income eligibility, Medicaid eligibility, different health insurance companies that choose to participate in that state. So the states would bear most of the burden for building the individual exchanges because each one has different needs. Each one has to have its own website. So the Republicans figured, ha ha, we can screw this one up. I mean, keep in mind, when Republicans are screwing up Obamacare, what they're doing is they're hurting you and me. They're hurting people who need health insurance. But they don't give a rat's patootie about that. This is all a political game for these guys. So the Republican-run states didn't cooperate. Tea Party Republicans convinced 36 states to not set up their own exchanges. Most of them have Republican governors, and they said no to helping out their own states. And because that happened, the federal government had to step in and do their job for them with the healthcare.gov website, which was supposed to be just like Google, just a portal. This meant plugging in a boatload of information about each of these 36 states' insurance rules onto one site, healthcare.gov, on very short notice, building 36 separate websites into healthcare.gov. That's a damn complicated thing. And we're sitting around going, hey, what's wrong? I'll tell you what's wrong. Republican state lawmakers decided to sabotage Obamacare. They decided that was more important than helping people get health care. This is the most important thing I'm going to say probably, well, certainly up to this point. You need to take this and use this and repeat it in Twitter and on Facebook and share it with everybody you know. And here it is. When Fox so-called News and Republicans talk about how healthcare.gov is not working, they're not complaining. They're bragging. Obamacare is working just fine in the states that set up their own exchanges. That's how it was supposed to work. I mean, some of the state exchange sites have had a few bugs, but every website does when it first comes out. Jonathan Cohen wrote about this in the New Republic. He said, Consumers are getting opportunities they never had before to shop for insurance, each one with clearly defined benefits. 180,000 people have completed applications for insurance in the state exchanges, and of those, 50,000 have enrolled. Of course, you're not going to hear that on Fox News. So today, in a speech at the White House, President Obama said that his administration is going to fix healthcare.gov. Let's hope that the president and his administration can get these Republican-caused Obamacare rollout problems sorted out quickly. And let's hope also that they begin to call out. This is the thing that was missing. And for me, I watched almost all of President Obama's speech this morning. And he never once said the Tea Party Republicans who convinced their states not to create exchanges caused this problem. I mean, he's really good at taking the blame and not blaming other people. But I really would like to see him or others in the administration start pointing out to these Republican states that didn't do exchanges and thus dumped that workload on the federal government. You know, to just point out where the real problem lies. It's with the Tea Party.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Have you been able to sign up with Obamacare? What's your experience been like? I'm really curious to hear that. Give us a shout. We'll be back. Welcome back. John Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And Ron in Denver, you had an experience with Obamacare?
Yes, I did. I had to file late taxes because my employer's a Republican. So it'd give you a link right after I filed my taxes. To the national website, which I clicked on, and it took me right to my state, Colorado, and I was shopping for insurance within 5 minutes.
Wow. Okay, so I'm over at the Kaiser Foundation, the Henry J. Kaiser Foundation, KFF.org. They've got profiles for each one of the states. And let me just tell you about Colorado and why. June 1st, 2011, Governor John Hickenlooper signed Senate Bill 11-200 into law, announcing the Colorado Health Benefit Exchange. In January 2013, they announced a new name would be Connect for Health Colorado, and it works. They've got the whole thing laid out. They got the names of the board members and everything here. So you happen to live in one of those states where the governor and the state legislature said, okay, let's do it. And so it took you 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you saving money, or are you getting insurance for the first time, or is it costing you more?
Yeah, Tom, 51 years old, I will be next month. And first time I've ever had insurance, and I priced the low plan at $271, which I get a $40 supplement, so it'll cost me about $230 a month, which I don't think is too bad for a 51-year-old man.
No, I can tell you, back when I was in my 50s, Louise and I were living in Vermont, and we were buying our health insurance through the local Chamber of Commerce. And the two of us together were costing in the neighborhood of $800 to $900, a month. So, $200, you're paying about half of what I was paying. So that's a pretty good deal. Ron, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for sharing that. Thanks for listening to AM 760 there in Denver. Patricia in Sacramento. Hey, Patricia.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Tom, I just wanted to just quickly talk about, I've been following what's been happening in Greece, and my worries here in the United States is I feel like we're kind of headed that same direction. And the reason I say this is I'm sure you've heard that in Greece they are cutting a lot of their social programs.
Yes,
and
radically.
I read this morning in the Huffington Post that some of the Democrats are thinking about negotiating cuts in Social Security and food stamps.
Yes, I was very disappointed to hear Dick Durbin yesterday come out and say that he's willing to cut Social Security. I think that that's insane. I think any Democrat who talks like that should be hearing from their constituents immediately. I mean, it's like Democrats created Social Security. To say we're going to do a chain CPI and cut benefits, insane is the only word I can come up with for it. Richard Trumka, who has been one of our Conversations with Great Minds over conversationswithgreatminds.com, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He's the president of the AFL-CIO. He said, and I quote, this was today in a speech that he gave it doesn't say where he gave it, but in Washington, D.C. He said, no politician, I don't care the political party, will get away with cutting Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits don't, oh, he was in Las Vegas, don't try it. This warning goes double for Democrats. We will never forget, we will never forgive, and we will never stop working to end your career. And I would not be quite that emphatic over the one single issue, but I think that, frankly, the people will. I mean, you know, the reason the Democratic Party has had as much power as it has since the 1930s is because of Medicare, is because of Social Security, since the 1960s, because of Medicare and Medicaid. And I know Pete Peterson, the right-wing Wall Street billionaire, has spent a fortune on this. I know that Simpson and Bowles are both like total sellouts. It just astounds me to hear Democrats sell out on this. I think they are committing political suicide. Susan, in Brunswick, Georgia, you had an experience with the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, Tom. First of all, I wanted to say I don't have a computer, so I was not able to log on to the website to see what the insurances were offered. Mm-hmm. They are sending me a package in the mail at the end of this month for people such as myself that don't have a computer. But I currently do have insurance on my own. I've had it for the last 2 years. Am I allowed to say which insurance company
sure.
it is?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I do live in Georgia. It's a Republican state, of course. And they said that they were participating in the exchange, and the rate that they offered me, I was originally paying $269 per month with a $2,500 deductible. When they clicked me on, and this was done over the phone, when they clicked me on to their participation of the healthcare exchange, and I asked them for the cheapest bronze category. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm 56 years old, never been sick. I'm a vegan. There's not even a record of me ever being sick in the hospital, nothing like that. I don't even use the system, even when I had insurance through my employer 6 years ago. They gave me a quote of $537 a month with a deductible of $4,000. And I was and that is with the state kicking in their portion of the money as well.
Susan, what's your annual income?
My annual income is $34,000. They were also putting in my husband's income, which was just his Social Security. That's all it was. And I was explaining to them that, you know, I pay for it out of my own pocket, though. And they say, well, that doesn't really matter. Yeah. And so my husband just gets Social Security. We don't have any other income except that and then my $34,000 a year. But I'm a little bit upset now because I really thought that my insurance was going to be, I expected it to go up a little bit.
No, it should have gone down. It should have gone down. But here's the deal. On November 16th, 2012, Governor Nathan Deal of Georgia announced that Georgia had stopped planning for an exchange. In the previous year, Governor Deal issued an executive order to create the Georgia Health Exchange Advisory Committee. 25-member committee met, blah-de-blah, December 2011, final recommendations. Basically, Georgia is not taking the additional Medicaid money. The reason I asked your income is my guess is that at your income level and your husband's combined, or maybe even just at your income level, if the state was taking Medicaid covers, I believe, people up to 400% of the poverty level in depending on the state and in staggered amounts. And 400 times the poverty level is the poverty level is typically around $15,000, so that would be up to $60,000 a year, you would get some kind of subsidy. So probably if Georgia took the money, and certainly if Georgia had set up their own state exchange, you would have saved money. But because you've got a Republican governor and a Republican state legislature, they basically said that they were going to stick it to you.
So what happens for people like me, because there's no way I could afford $500.
I absolutely understand. I think what happens is that hopefully the media will get this story. The people in blue states, like the guy who just called from Colorado, where they did set up the exchange and they did take the Medicaid money, and he was about your age, and I didn't ask his income, but his cost of insurance went down substantially. You live in a red state, and your cost would go up, and your deductible would go up. And as you know, now Fox is only going to talk about the red state stories. I've been noticing the, you know, all the coverage they do is stories from the red states. But at some point, the penny's going to drop for the media, and they're going to figure out that people living in Georgia have a very different experience than people living in Colorado. And it all has to do with the fact that the Republicans in their state decided to screw their people, thinking or hoping that the people would blame it on President Obama and the Democrats. And when that story gets out that, you know, Susan in Georgia can't get a good deal because, they didn't take the Medicaid money or they didn't set up the exchange, but Paul in Denver got a great deal because they did both, then people are going to start demanding that, and I think that the red states are going to get shamed into offering a reasonable deal for you. And Susan, until then, hang on to what you've got. Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Cliff in Eastlake, Colorado. Hey, Cliff, you think it's going to fail, huh?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
I understand, are you an ND or you have a background in naturopathic medicine, right?
No. I mean, I flirted with it for a couple of years when I was young. I got a couple of degrees in herbal stuff, you know, mostly mail order stuff. But I can tell you about Eupatorium perfoliatum and Verbascum thapsus and Achillea millefolia. You know, I can tell you all about herbalism, but I am not an expert on medicine. No.
Okay. Well, but you seem to have knowledge of alternative healthcare and methods.
I have some familiarity with it. Yes.
Okay. The reason I'm saying is because you know, like I do, I have a background in nutrition, that the biggest driver of healthcare costs is the obesity epidemic and type 2 diabetes. You'd agree with that, right?
Probably. I haven't seen the stats recently. I know the cancer is going up really, really rapidly, and I think, frankly, the hormones we're putting in our beef and that's getting into our milk have something to do with that. I think cancer is far more expensive than type 2 diabetes. Cliff, I'm sorry. I've got to move along here. The machine just cut me off. But if your point was that's going to bankrupt the system, let me pick this up after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Well, I'll say it right now, actually. That's the reason you want to get everybody in the country insured, because when everybody in the country is insured, everybody in the country will start having an incentive to live more healthy.
And welcome back.
Michelle in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Michelle, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish TV satellite network. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just caught the tail end of your last caller, but I think my call kind of ties into this. Some of the right-wing propaganda that's been pushed, against young people, you don't need to sign up, they're young and healthy, it's an unfair burden. That's not really true if you look at the statistics of childhood illnesses. I mean, cancer rates have skyrocketed in the last 100 years. Childhood leukemia, asthma, autism,
obesity.
And I agree with you. I mean, some of this has to do quite possibly with the growth hormones that are pumped into our primary protein sources, but also it's things coming out of GMO foods that we can't always trace. Yep. Corn is in just about everything. Plastics, the results from plastics, and one that's just really starting to, I think, hit consciousness is the effects of EMF, if you're familiar with that at all.
Yeah, well, low-frequency radiation, EMF, electromotive force or electromagnetic fields.
Absolutely. There's study upon study of cancer clusters that show up around
high power tension lines and cell towers. Yeah.
Yeah, and also what is it? The World Health Organization has now also talked about cell phones do cause tumors. So in other words,
although they're getting better,
people need to understand. Unfortunately, in the world we live in, between all these things that I just listed, the hormones, the GMO foods, the plastics, the EMF. It's not a matter of if you get sick, it's when you get sick. And the point is people are getting sick and much more severely sick at a younger and younger age.
Yeah.
So this is not to hear.
I can't validate that as you know statistically, but every bit of information that I have causes me to, at a gut level, say that you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't quote a Kaiser Family Foundation study or anything like that, but I think that you're right.
Right, and I don't have numbers right off the top of my head either, but it, you know, if you take in the bigger picture, the whole.
Well, the explosion of autism, for example, is a really simple one. I mean, it used to be 1 in 2,000 births, and now it's 1 in 100.
Right, and no one seems to have an explanation for this.
Right.
But it's not just human beings. It's the animal life around the planet, the number of extinctions. Animals on the brink of extinction.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a colossal confluence of the last 100-150 years of so-called progress that is now, I think, coming back to...
Yeah, we're living at the peak of the curve, the L curve, the spike in population. We're hitting 7 billion people. We're consuming more than half the planet's water. We're consuming most of the planet's net photosynthetic output. Yeah, you add it all up, and you've got to do something about it. Michelle, thank you for the call. Very well said. We'll be right back 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Chris in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening on TuneIn Radio. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, I was calling actually to respond to an earlier caller, David, who kept repeating over and over again, so what we're going to do here is keep taxing those 20-somethings with this tax penalty. And it seems odd to me that those who oppose the ACA rarely, if ever, mention all of the exemptions to that tax penalty. I'm looking and I'm seeing about 20 different exemptions for which most people would apply.
For example?
Like if you've had a fire in the last year, if you've faced any kind of natural disaster, if you've been homeless, if you've faced foreclosure or eviction in the last 6 months, if you received a shutoff notice from a utility company, so many different things that would apply to, you know, people of lower income.
Basically, if you're in an economic crisis and you can't afford or choose not to get health insurance, you are not going to get that tax penalty.
Exactly. And, you know, we can take a look at Massachusetts as an example. RomneyCare has the same tax penalty. And, you know, when we look at it, every year since it began, less than 1% of the population had to pay that tax penalty.
Right.
And it was usually the people that were rich enough to not have to worry about insurance.
Which is very rich. I mean,
exactly.
If you can write a check for $1 million to cover a cancer treatment out of your pocket, you can certainly afford to pay a $200 fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
I find it odd that they never, ever want to talk about all of these exemptions.
Yeah.
And like I said, most people could probably fall into one of those categories.
Okay.
You can even claim a religious exemption.
Wow.
And how are they going to ask you to prove that?
Yeah. 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 It's not like this is the draft. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. Joe in Gibson, Iowa, listening on KABQ's stream. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Actually, it's Sioux City, Iowa, but that's okay.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to say about the healthcare changes. I mean, the first day they rolled out, you couldn't, on the healthcare.gov, you couldn't get on very well. It asked you to create the account. It wouldn't populate the security questions for me. So I waited a few days and then finally got through the entire process and it said, you have successfully created your account. Go check this link in your email and we'll keep going. And I went to my email about a minute later and it said, I'm sorry, you didn't click the link fast enough. And ever since then, I have not been able to create my account through the healthcare.gov.
Yeah.
Have you
called them?
State exchange. Yeah, and I called them, and they said, if you're having trouble, please call this number. So I called them, and the guy was taking all my information, my name, my address. So I thought, okay, great. He signed me up, you know, through their end, and I'm gonna get my account created. And then at the very end, then he said, well, we're still working on it, and you'll just have to keep trying, and thank you very much for calling. So
yeah.
It has not been a great experience for me. I'm not very anxious about it because I know we have, you know, until January 1st or 15th or whatever that you're actually required to have the insurance. So it's still months away. But the experience that I've had so far is it has not been good with the healthcare.gov.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, on December 14th, 2012, this is from the Kaiser Foundation site, Governor Terry Branstad informed federal officials that Iowa would pursue a state-federal partnership for the exchange. So, but they're, yeah, okay. Where do you see that?
Because we have a Democratic legislature.
Oh, I see. Here it is. The state intends to transition to a state-funded exchange in 2015. So for right now, you've got the problem that other people have where the federal government is having to do the work that the states should have done and load the state database and get all the state information and find out, you know, who's eligible in the state and who isn't and you know, what the state's Medicaid situation is like and you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be rough sledding in Iowa until 2015 because of the way that your governor, Terry Branstad, do I have that right?
Yeah.
Has set this thing up. So, you know, good luck, Joe. I mean, but keep trying. Give me a call back in a month or so and let me know how it's working out, please. Sam in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Sam. Thanks for listening to iHeartRadio. What's up?
How are you, Tom?
Good.
Hey, I was able to register online and I got to the point where I could see the plans. But what occurs to me is, you know, we seem to be doing something wrong here. It is a lot more complicated than it needs to be. And I guess my question is it a function of the law? Why can't these portals just click you through to the insurance company and have, you know, that you pick, for example, when you go to the screen that shows the different plans, say you pick the bronze plan and it's Anthem or whatever it is. Why can't you just be clicked through right to the insurance company, get processed through their site,
right,
and then they can report back to the government? Here's the guy's Social Security number. He just signed up.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know the answer. It may be that the insurance companies didn't want to take on that cost and hassle. It may be that the law was written. I mean, keep in mind, this law was the consequence of a whole lot of compromises. And it's not a perfect law, not even close. I mean, this is why Vermont has said that starting in 2016, when the law makes it legal, they're going to pull out altogether and just do a single-payer healthcare system in the state of Vermont. And I have a feeling that's going to go viral across the United States. And that's the thing that the conservatives are really afraid of. That's what they're really freaked out about. Sam, thanks for the call. Sue in Shelton, Washington. Hey, Sue.
Hey. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a unique perspective. I'm a CPA,
mm-hmm.
and I've had my own business for 25 years. And here in Washington, I've heard from probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 of my clients now who are worried and concerned because they're saving so much money on their health care. So they call the old CPA to see if I can assure them that it's okay.
Really? People are worried because when they...
Myself and
people are worried because...
a great deal of money.
People are saving a lot of... You need to kick me up 10 dB, Shane. People are worried because they...
They're saving so much money.
They think something must be wrong. Well, now you live in Washington State, and in Washington State, Christine Gregoire, your governor, signed Senate Bill 5445 into law way back in May of 2011. October 2012, the state Washington Health Plan Finder went online or went up, you know, in background. So your state planned for this. Your state took the Medicaid money. Your state has a governor and a legislature that's working collaboratively with the state. And you're saying that as a CPA, your clients are saving so much money on Obamacare that some of them are concerned that they must have plugged something in wrong.
Absolutely.
That's great news. See, I'm telling you, you are in a blue state, and your experience is so different from that woman who called from Georgia who lives in a red state and the fellow who called from Ohio, which is a red state. It's just, this is the big story, I think, of Obamacare.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. As you know, we put up this website, lasthours.org, with a little 10-minute video on it that was produced by George DiCaprio and Earl Katz and directed by Lila Connors. Sam Sachs and I wrote the thing. And it's getting some interest all around. And
it is. There's Tom Hartmann talking about Last Hours. You can find it at lasthours.org. And Tom Hartmann, welcome to the Randy Rhodes Show.
Well, thank you, Nicole Sandler, filling in for Randy Rhodes. Welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program. Just for both of our listeners, we are simulcasting both shows. We're both on the air at the same time, so you're listening to both shows at the same time. It's great to have you with us.
Well, and it's great to have you with us, too, because some things are more important, you know, than, like, radio competition. For instance, the future of the planet.
And yeah. Well, I always thought of Randy as collaboration, not competition. I think
absolutely.
She's one of the most talented people in radio, and so are you.
Well, thank you so much, as are you. And the work that you've done over the years on so many subjects is so valuable. And back in the 90s, you wrote a book called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which was sort of made into a movie by Leonardo DiCaprio. And now, I guess you're taking the premise back and bringing it up to date with some really scary information about the planet. And so the first piece of that is a new video. It's available on YouTube and at lasthours.org. And tell us, for those who haven't seen it yet, what we'll see in those 10 minutes when we watch the video.
Sure. And thank you, Nicole. And thanks for helping make this simulcast work. And thanks to Randy and her team for helping make this simulcast work. What we did, you're right, back in the 90s, I wrote The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight being oil, and it was about peak oil. And back then, there wasn't much discussion about climate change. It didn't make much of its way into the book. Mm-hmm. And yet it was already happening. You know, we now know in retrospect that we were passing tipping points in the 90s that we didn't even realize existed. And in the late 90s and the early 2000s, I started reading in the geologic journals or in science. I subscribe to Science. I'm a member of AAAS, and they publish, you know, all this eclectic stuff from the various geology journals. And the geologists were just figuring out in 2000 and 2001 what caused the Permian mass extinction. And in fact, by 2004, 2005, they'd figured out pretty much what caused most of the there's been five mass extinctions. All of them were caused by global warming. And in every single case, it was because the Earth's crust got breached. And the one that ended the dinosaurs was a meteorite. The rest of them were volcanoes and continents moving around. The Earth's crust got breached. A whole bunch of carbon dioxide, greenhouse gases went into the atmosphere, warmed up the Earth, and killed off more than half of all life. And what I'm reading from and hearing from these geologists, and now Mr. Hansen has just recently come out with a piece where he said, you know, if we burn all the carbon that just the oil companies and coal companies say that they have monetized on their balance sheets, it'll be a 30-degree increase in the temperature of the planet, which is definitely extinction.
You mentioned Mr. Hansen. You were talking about James Hansen.
James Hansen, yes.
The longest time was the chief, chief climate scientist at NASA.
Yeah.
This guy, and he's the one who also has done a lot of work with the 350.org people, and he very famously said, once we get above, you know, 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere, it's game over for the planet. So this is really scary stuff we're talking about.
Yes. So what we do in the movie at lasthours.org and also in the video, which you can find on YouTube, but I mean lasthours.org points to it, is get the geologists on to talk about, you know, the possibility that if we warm the planet up enough, that this frozen methane, there's trillions of tons, somewhere between 3 and 10 trillion tons of methane frozen in the permafrost and in the ocean, along the ocean beds, particularly around the coasts of the continents. If that stuff melts, if the ice that is holding those bubbles of methane, the methane itself isn't frozen, but if the ice slurry that is holding it in place melts and trillions of tons of methane are released into our atmosphere, it will mean the death of everything on this planet larger than a rat, in all probability. I mean, depending on how fast it goes and how much of it goes.
Okay.
And nobody's talking about that. So we brought the E word, the extinction word, into the conversation.
Most definitely. And that is really important because we hear scientists talk about it. We hear game over for the planet. But nobody really is coming out publicly saying extinction. And that's what, you know, that's what people are telling you privately. And now you're saying, wait a minute, we got to take this out of the back rooms and let everybody know that this is how serious it is.
Yeah, and when we came out with the movie, we sent it out to various organizations looking for endorsements. Lester Brown was the very first to endorse it. The World Watch, Earth Watch. He's like the environmentalist. He's been doing this work for decades, almost half a century. Then Al Gore endorsed it, and on it has gone. We've gotten a number of very, very good endorsements for the work for this. Specifically for this video, saying, okay, let's start talking about extinction. You know, now is the time. Greenpeace, Kumi Naidu wrote the international executive director of Greenpeace wrote a long and glowing endorsement of it. So we're hopeful that we can change the conversation away from, are we going to lose Miami? Which would be a terrible thing because you're down in that neck of the woods.
Yes, I am.
So it's
right, Randy.
But move the conversation away from, are we going to lose Miami, to, are we going to lose everything on Earth bigger than a cat? And that has happened 5 times in the history of the Earth, and it's always happened because of global warming.
You know, Tom Hartman, this is so frightening. And again, you were on my show this morning, and we talked about it, and I mentioned that somebody in the chat room had said, you know, people's hair is not on fire about this yet. Mm-hmm. And that's such an, you know, I think that's why you've made this film. Obviously, you're not making any money off it. You're not getting rich off it.
No,
this
we're
is
not.
Something that is so important. If we want to see the planet survive for our children and grandchildren, we need to take action now.
Yeah. In fact, it cost us money to make this film. And so it's definitely, you know, we're not making any money on it. But beyond that, I mean, the whole point of it is we need to wake the world up. There's an appropriate time to yell fire in a crowded theater, and that's when the theater's on fire. And here we are. We need to be saying this to the world and to the people. So we did.
You know, there's an article that I read on my show this morning before you and I spoke, and it's in the homework section at randyrhodes.com, and it's from the Herald, theherald.com in Australia, called "The Ocean Is Broken," and it's the story of these sailors who sailed from Australia to Japan and then Japan to San Francisco, and noticed the absence of sea life.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much bad stuff going on, whether it's from Fukushima, something you and I talked about that I'll be talking about later here, or because this methane is bubbling up from the bottom of the ocean, or a combination of all
and the acidification also. You know, 90% of that heat is going into the oceans, and a lot of the carbon dioxide, about a third of the carbon dioxide, is going into the oceans. It forms carbonic acid, makes the oceans acid. Most, you know, many, many ocean-dwelling creatures can't do well in an acidic ocean.
Ah. You know, whatever the cause is, we need to turn it around. You know, part of the problem, and we haven't talked the politics of it yet, is that we've got almost half or more of Congress saying, oh, poo-poo that. I saw a tweet from Donald Trump today saying, who's talking about global warming? It's the coolest whatever nonsense he was spewing.
Yeah.
That makes it harder to get the message across when you have people like that out there saying, pay no attention to the scientists.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Well, I think that's why we need these kind of very blunt messages, and I encourage people to go to lasthours.org and check it out.
I encourage people to do the same. So this is the first video, the first installment, if you will, from the full-length movie. How often are we going to get videos from the film to follow this?
About every 3 or 4 months for the next year. We have 4 more that we're going to produce, and then we've got the full-length movie that's going to come out in 2015. And there's the music. We got to break this up. But Nicole Sandler with the Randy Rhodes Show, thank you so much for simulcasting the Randy Rhodes Show with the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom. I hope everybody has gone.
Nope. Okay. Oh, Nicole is gone. Thanks. Thanks so much, Nicole. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And that was fun. It's not often. I think the last time I simulcast my show with somebody else, it was Alex Jones. Randy Rhodes is a whole lot better. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Quarter after the hour, and Tom Hartman here with you. And if I can... Oh, wrong mouse. No wonder. Richard in Cable, Wisconsin, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV system. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Regarding the financial shutdown, we have a senator or congressman, Reibel, he's a Republican, and he voted in favor of going ahead and removing this roadblock that we had. The other congressman, Duffy, he riddled him for it and said we should have stuck to the guns.
And keep the government shut down.
An independent voter. Mm-hmm. I give this Mr. Reibel credit for standing up. In this part of the country, there's a lot of people, very, very poor-paying jobs. Mm-hmm. And when our government shut down, a lot of the jobs that people used, logging, you need a permit, harvesting such things as nuts, fruits, boughs, permits just to get firewood to heat your home. These people couldn't get it. And those, the amount of money they would have collected is lost, and it can't be recouped.
Yeah, that's that $24 billion that the shutdown cost the government. Most of that, I'm guessing, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20.
The poorest of the people are the ones that got hurt the worst, because that will, whatever this Affordable Care Act costs, it's already costed nothing compared to when they shut the government down and how they are acting and restricting this economy from get going.
Yeah, they've spent $235 million on the website. That's 0.2 billion. But when the Republicans shut down the government, it cost people, including the average working people and the working poor that you're describing, cost them $22 to $24 billion. We could have built, what, is that 100 of these government websites for the cost of that? I mean, it's just, it's for the cost of the shutdown. And for what? I mean, just so that they can have a tantrum and hold their face, you know, hold their breath until their faces turn blue. So have you contacted your member of Congress there, Richard?
I've contacted this Mr. Duffy several times. Even on my medication, I was taking a pill. It cost me 10 cents a day, and I was taking two a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this for about 26, 27 years, the same medicine. Something happened where somebody researched it and said they didn't get the right patent. They're going back now almost 30 years. And there wasn't the right humidity in the factory. And the feds there in the Food and Drug Administration issued a new permit to a new company. I almost fell over when the wife went into Walmart to buy these pills. It went from 10 cents a pill to $6.68 a pill.
Whoa! Well, this is, I mean, the drug companies, if anybody is good at screwing their customers, it's the drug companies. I mean, they've got it down to an art form, and apparently they got you too. Richard, thank you for calling. Thanks for sharing the story with us. And thank you in particular for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and interesting, I've been asking people for their experiences with Obamacare, and apparently we got punked. We got called by somebody who's being paid to call into radio stations, at least according to Terry in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Terry.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine.
I just
tell me what happened.
Well, I was running a few errands, and I was listening to another liberal talk show, Ed Schultz. I guess he has a sub in, at least between the hours of 1 and 2. and I was just coming, just got in the car, and I heard, I don't think it was the same lady, but basically the same identical facts or complaint about Obamacare.
In the state of Georgia?
I'm sorry?
In the state of Georgia?
I can't say if it was in Georgia, but yeah. It sounded like the same premise.
Yeah, same talking points.
That her premium went up about $200. She was in the $300 range. Now it's up to $500-something, so I thought, but it didn't sound like the same lady.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but it just seemed to me it's like a...
there is a small industry in this country. You can make money working from home by calling radio stations or posting blogs, and you get paid by the post, you get paid by the call to say things. And it sounds like, you know, there's a script about this. And these guys, this is a full court press. These billionaires, particularly the Koch brothers, they do not want working class people to have access to free or inexpensive health insurance. They consider that socialism, and they think it's bad for society.
Yeah, that lady claims she had a husband on Social Security. I'm 68 years old, and she didn't sound that old.
No, she said she was 56.
Oh, so, really?
Okay. Yeah, so she's younger than her husband.
Maybe she's telling the truth, but I just thought same same scenario, but it sounded like different ladies.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, thank you very much for the call. Tom in Eagle, Colorado, it says you're in Colorado. Now, we had a caller from Colorado who says price went down. You said yours is going up, and you're calling from a California phone number. Are you?
I'm calling from a Skype. My cell phone battery was going dead.
Okay.
So I am on Skype, not on a telephone. So they use, I don't know what numbers it shows up on yours. But
yeah, it shows up as a California number.
Okay. I apologize for that. Like I said, I would have called from my cell phone, except it was starting to beep at me and the battery was going dead.
Okay.
But my experience has been the Connect for Colorado website worked fine. I did try going to the Gov website. It directed me to the Colorado website. That all worked fine. There were no problems there. I was quite shocked, though, when I put in the little bit of information that the website asked me for. It asked for my date of birth and whether I'm a smoker or a non-smoker. And I put that in there, and it came up that the least expensive health insurance policy I can get now is $815 a month. I'm 57 years old. The plan, the health insurance that I currently have, is no longer available as of the first of the year. Actually, I think they go through the open enrollment period, which is in March. That was costing me, and is currently costing me, $560 a month.
Right. Did you check to see if you're eligible for any subsidies? What's your annual income?
I am not eligible for any subsidies. I'm slightly over their threshold for that.
How much do you make?
Well, that's not really. I'm slightly over the threshold.
Well, if you're gonna quote the numbers from Obamacare, you don't want to quote your own numbers. I mean, I could fact check it for you right now online if you'd like.
Well, you know, the I don't see. I'm admitting that I am over the threshold.
Right.
Okay. Because I did try.
Okay. So you. All right. Tom, I don't see this going anywhere useful. Thank you for the call. Mark in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Mark, you are in Colorado, according to our caller ID, and you're listening on AM760. Do you have an experience with the Colorado healthcare system?
Yeah, the first day it was a little jammed up. The second day I got right in, filed all my forms, got all the way down to the health plans, and about 3 days later, I had a call from a customer service rep saying, hey, did you get this number that says you're not eligible for Medicare? Now you can go forward. So she talked me right through, and I got to plans that were, for myself and my college-age son, were like about $600 a month, you know, much, much better coverage than I'm getting now for about $1,000. These are $600 and some change, and I'm getting a $300 tax credit.
Wow. Can I ask how old you are, Mark?
I'm going to be 57 next week.
Well, that's the same age as the guy who just called, who said that Colorado quoted him $800 for the cheesiest plan.
Well, you know, I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, apparently
I went right in there, no problem at all. And then I did it for my other son, who's 26, because we're helping him pay for insurance because he doesn't have a job that can pay for it.
Right.
And we got in there, and I the one number I didn't get yet is his tax credit. But again, you know, the copays go down, the deductibles go down, the coverage goes up, and we're looking at probably being.
Yep, we just lost you, Mark. Okay.
Nope.
You still there?
Gone?
Yeah, we're still here.
I am.
Okay.
Oh.
Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can finish your sentence here. We have just a minute left.
Oh, with my 26-year-old son, we got in there. We didn't get yet the tax credit number, but it looks like he's going to get better coverage, lower deductibles, lower copays for less than we're paying now, and we're paying about $200 now. So
right.
It should be virtually free by the time we get the tax credit.
Wow. So once again, you live in a state where the governor and the legislature said, okay, let's build the exchange. Let's take the Medicare copay or the Medicare or Medicaid, excuse me, Medicaid assistance from the federal government. And your experience in the Colorado system is that it's working well.
And I'm glad to hear you say that earlier, too, because for about 2 weeks I've been saying the same thing. All the problems with the national exchange is the fact that all these other states aren't doing it. Those of us who are have no problem at all. It's because you've got 20-some states all trying to get these people in there.
Yeah, I mean, the national exchange was originally supposed to be like Google. You go in and you say, here's what I'm looking for, and then it points you out to that website. I'm from Colorado. Okay, here, go to Colorado. And, you know, with just the one step in between of making sure that you're actually a citizen and eligible for health care. And instead, because, you know, all these governors said, nah, we're not going to do it, don't want to do it. As a result of that, the federal exchange has to deal with all these different state databases, and it's a mess. Mark, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your experience. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Fascinating times we live in. People calling radio shows to complain about health insurance, really. It's the good, the bad, the very, very eccanately ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The good. Pope Francis, the Bishop of Rome, is making headlines again and for all the right reasons. During Thursday's Mass last week, the Pope called out religious extremists, calling them a serious illness in the church. He said, and when a Christian becomes a disciple of the ideology, he has lost the faith. He is no longer a disciple of Jesus. He is a disciple of this attitude of thought. The faith becomes ideology, and ideology frightens. It is a serious illness, this of ideological Christians. I couldn't have said it better myself, Francis. Keep up the good work. The bad. The New York Post. The Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid is known for its outrageous front-page headlines, most of which are pretty funny. The front page of this week's Sunday edition was anything but comical. It was downright misleading. The cover story was about the $13 billion settlement that the federal government reached with Wall Street giant J.P. Morgan Chase. The Post's headline makes it seem like the government is stealing from the bank. In reality, the government is making J.P. Morgan pay up for fleecing investors and homeowners during the lead-up to the 2008 financial crisis. J.P. Morgan is the real criminal here, but good luck trying to find that on the Post's front page. And the very, very ugly Senator Jim Inhofe. During an interview with WABC Radio this weekend, the Oklahoma Republican senator called Obamacare socialized medicine and used his own experience with blocked arteries to argue that if the United States adopts a European-style health system, people like him could die. Take a listen.
And if you're in a country other than the United States, a lot of them, you can't get it done. In my case, with my age, that would have been about a six-month wait because I hadn't had a heart attack. And so the message there is that, you know, I say this to all of your American listeners, let's hold on to what we've got here. And, you know, you're talking to someone right now who probably wouldn't be here if we had socialized medicine in America.
Senator Inhofe is wrong, totally full of it, and a liar. Believe it or not, we already have socialized medicine here in the United States. It's called Medicare. And it works perfectly for people like him who are over the age of 65. The idea that European healthcare systems leave people to die is wrong. It's really just the death panel myth by another name. Sadly, these sorts of scare tactics are commonplace in today's Republican Party, and that, in addition to being a horrible lie, is very, very ugly. See, it's like they're trying to scare people away from getting insurance. I mean, this is where you could make the argument that Jim Inhofe has blood on his hands. He is scaring people, particularly young people, away from buying or from just even signing up for free healthcare insurance. If they're low income, they get it for free with the subsidies, health insurance that could save their lives. But these guys are so blinded by their ideology and so blinded by their hatred of our first black president that they will do and say anything to try to blow up the signature accomplishment of his presidency. And I really believe that that's what it boils down to. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I think the problem with this this group, the supposedly invincible 18 to 35-year-olds that are going to have to, sign up for insurance, you know, they are the number one most highest risk group for traumatic injury. And certainly the auto insurance companies know that. That's why their auto insurance rates are so high. Is that unfair? I mean, but look, they have auto accidents, they have gunshot wounds, drug overdoses, they have injuries from outdoor sporting accidents. The largest percentage of
venereal diseases
are young people.
Yeah.
People under 35.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, my brother's stepdaughter, she's 22. She was out four-wheeling on one of those dangerous things. She crashed into a tree. Going about 35, you know, she had a concussion. She compound fracture of the right femur, a broken left ankle, a broken right shoulder, and now a paralyzed arm from the accident. So now she's not only disabled, but she no insurance. And you know, my mom was being so sad about it. She has a now she's got this $225,000 hospital bill. And I said, Mom, Shyla doesn't have a problem. The hospital has a problem,
right?
Because she's never going to be able to pay it back. So,
well, and beyond that, I mean, we had a similar experience in our family. One of our kids broke her ankle skateboarding when she was 17, and she was covered by our insurance at the time. And she's had to have, I think, three. I know two different surgeries, one that was like 2 years later after the first one. And she had 10 pieces of metal put in her ankle. I mean, she broke several bones. And, you know, it was a mess. I mean, it was a serious, serious surgery. And this is a 17-year-old. Young people, you're right. Young people are more likely to end up in the ER, and they really should have health insurance. And why billionaires like the Koch brothers and multimillionaires like Jim Inhofe would want to try and convince young people not to get insurance, you know, other than that they want to cripple our first black president and his presidency. The only thing I can come up with. Paul, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yes, I want to make a couple of points. I'm always interested by this sort of right-wing argument that contends that Obamacare or any sort of socialized medicine, in terms of its cost, is going to bankrupt this country.
First of all, Obamacare is not socialized medicine. It's all done with private health insurance companies.
Absolutely.
It's just a giant group. It's as if the entire country joined in with General Motors and said, okay, we're all going to buy a policy from the big insurance company.
Exactly. And it's been characterized as sort of this road to socialized medicine or socialized medicine itself. I don't agree with that characterization, but it does exist. And I'm fascinated that none of these people, though they seem to be able to quote all of these sort of fictitious numbers that you find from right-wing think tanks and so forth, they can't seem to quote me the numbers on what it costs this nation every year to have this large number of people that are uninsured and underinsured. In other words, what does it cost us in economic productivity? Because some really bright young man in his 30s at Google can't go out and do the new startup because his family can't be covered. Because his insurance coverage is linked to his job. Now, that's not the case in Germany, but it's the case here. So what does it cost when someone gets sick and then they can't afford to go in and be treated until their condition is acute and then they have to go to an emergency room? Well, it turns out it costs, you know, the average American family with insurance over $1,200 a year. Because that cost, as a previous caller raised, gets passed on to somebody. So for these people who want to talk about, you know, the cost to the nation, what I would ask them, tell me the numbers. What is it costing us? And there's a lot of good research out there on what it costs us to not insure people. Leave aside the morality of what
Yeah, and set aside the 45,000 people a year who die because they lack health insurance, according to Harvard.
Exactly. But, you know, they never seem to want to, you know, point to that. I mean, what does it cost us to when someone gets sick and we have to retrain and hire somebody new when preventive care might have, you know, helped that condition?
Yeah.
You know, so...
No, I'm with you, Steve.
All of the numbers...
I'm totally with you. You said it very well. Thank you very much for the call. Jim in Denver, Colorado, listening on AM 760, you tried to get into the exchange.
Well, actually, I'm covered through the VA, but my gut, I signed up my wife, who's with Kaiser now, mm-hmm. but she's paying like $780, almost $800 a month just to be able to see a doctor because she has pre-existing conditions. So we went in and we make like $58,000 in retirement money a year, mm-hmm. and that's below the threshold, I think. And so we got a subsidy, but first it took you to a website, Colorado or www.gov/peak or something like that. And it was a Medicare, you like applying for Medicare, and I knew we didn't qualify for that. Mm-hmm. So that's my only thing is I don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
You'd think that they would have had a shortcut to go around that instead
right.
of applying for Medicare. And then we got the refusal, and then they take that number and plug in your numbers and tell you what you owe. But 560 is a lot better than 800. So.
So you saw about a $300 reduction in your health insurance costs in Colorado.
In my wife's.
Yes. Yeah, and again, our caller ID says you're actually calling from Colorado, not like the guy before who said his price went up, who caller ID said he was calling from California, and Danielle said it sounded like he was in a boiler room in a call center when he called. Very interesting.
Yeah, I want to thank you for putting that out about the threshold, or the government website is just supposed to be a, what did you say?
Portal.
A portal.
Yeah.
And so everybody I talk to, I tell them, you know, they start saying how bad it is. And I tell you, that's why, you know, that's part of the reason.
Yeah. It's supposed to simply do a couple of the federal website was supposed to, number one, verify that you're actually a citizen and you're therefore eligible for health care. Number two, verify that you actually live in the state that you say you live in. And number three, verify that you are under 65 and therefore not eligible for Medicare, or I think in the military or something like that. You know, in other words, make sure that you're eligible to buy health insurance. And if those simple things are satisfied, and those are all, you know, and or kind of questions, right, and fairly straightforward stuff, then it just hands you off to the state website, as it did in your case to Colorado. And then you discover that, hey, health insurance is a whole lot cheaper because your state, Colorado, Governor John Hickenlooper actually set up an exchange and said, yes, we will take the Medicaid expansion money. So the subsidies are available to you and the health exchange system worked. Jim, thanks for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it. It's very interesting what happens. We've got another Maxine wants to tell us. Hers is cheaper, too, in Colorado, although she did have some issues. We'll be right back. 15 minutes before you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So, had an experience with Obamacare? Tell us about it. Welcome back. And... let's see here. Got to find a free speech TV caller. Marie in Pipe Creek, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Marie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was calling a few callers back. You had the guy that mentioned how important health care is for younger adults and, you know, 18-year-olds through 35 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to mention that that's so very true. And the other thing is, you know, you need to, at an earlier age, start taking care of your body and going for...
Oop, I think Marie accidentally hung up her phone. It's easy to do, especially if you've never been on radio before and you're a little nervous. Just hit the wrong button. Let's see here. Tim in Bristol, Vermont, is watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. This is about the VA, Veterans Administration.
Mm-hmm.
I received a letter from them that if you're part of the VA system,
right,
get in touch with Veterans Affairs, VA Form 1010EZ, 10-10EZ.
Okay. Why is that?
And they're... you're probably already enrolled in the healthcare system, the affordable healthcare system.
So veterans are kind of pre-enrolled in Obamacare?
Yeah. That 10-10 easy form will, you know, the VA will let you know exactly what's happening.
Now, this is for veterans who don't fully qualify for TRICARE and for other veterans benefits.
This is for people that are already enrolled in the VA system.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. Their website is www.va.gov/ACA.
Okay.
And the phone number is 1-877-222-8387.
Okay. So this makes it easier for vets to find out if they're eligible for benefits under Obamacare, and if so, what they are and all that kind of thing. Do I have that right, Tim?
Right. Yeah. And the Marketplace number website is www.healthcare.gov.
Right. Yeah, that's the main portal for the entire federal government,
right.
and sadly for 32 additional states.
Well, I don't have any control over that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's you know how you kind of get in touch with the VA if you're already in the VA system to find out about how it's connected up with the affordable health care.
Okay, great. Tim, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate the call, and thank you so much for watching Free Speech TV there in Bristol, Vermont. And once again, let me just make it really clear. If you're hearing, I don't like Obamacare stories, or it's costing me a fortune, it's a very high probability that it's like on the Hannity show where he simply had people on who lied, who had never bothered to check the Affordable Care Act and would have discovered that they would have saved money. So it's either like Hannity's TV show where they're lying to you, or it's people who live in red states. It's people who live in states like Georgia that have said, no, we're not going to do an exchange. No, we're not going to take the Medicaid expansion. We'll be right back. Welcome back to MS Before the Hour. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by the efforts to free an American political prisoner at former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, free-don.org, and goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person you helped. Victoria Jones, how are you, Victoria?
Very well, thank you.
So what's up today?
President Obama moves to get in front of the poor showing by the Obamacare website and its rollout today when he had an event in the Rose Garden where he was flanked by about a dozen people who had signed up or otherwise done well with the Affordable Care Act. A woman behind him fainted during the big finish of his remarks. But he basically said, yes, nobody's madder than me. He said there are no excuses. He said there's no sugarcoating the tech problems. But he spent most of his 27 minutes touting the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, pointing out that there are many things in the act that are already in effect that people may not realize that they're already getting, and saying that the law is not the website.
Right. Here's something, by the way, I'm surprised nobody's spinning this, that Obama's speech was so exciting that women were swooning. But a terrible, god-awful, sexist stereotype.
No, the pitch in the basement of the White House was, oh, well, thank goodness she's got Obamacare.
Yes. Oh, perfect. That's even better. That's even better. And here's the thing that gets me that is not being discussed. Healthcare.gov was supposed to be a portal. It was supposed to work the way Google.com does. You go to Google, you type in Victoria Jones, you hit the button, and it doesn't, Google then doesn't take all the information about you and say, here's the information about Victoria Jones. Instead, it points you to websites that have your picture and websites that have stories about you and maybe your website. So it's a portal. You leave Google as soon as you click out of it. And the healthcare.gov originally was just supposed to verify that you are a citizen, verify that you're not over 65, so you're not already covered by Medicare, verify, what was the other thing, whether or not you're military or something, and then hand you off to the state, like Google does. You know, when it hands you off to a website, it hands you off to Wikipedia or something. And because 32 governors and states have said, no, thank you, we're not... 36, okay. Because 36 states have said, no, we're not going to build an exchange, even though the federal government will pay for it. We're not going to do it. The federal government is having to build literally 36 states' worth of individual databases because each state has different eligibility requirements, different Medicare cutoffs, different poverty levels, different health insurance companies that are participating at different levels with different plans. And so there's this monster that the federal government has to handle now that never was planned for in the first place. And they've spent $230 million on this thing. And the government shutdown that the Republicans did to protest Obamacare cost us over $20 billion. You know, what's that, 100 times more? I mean, why didn't they take the $20 billion and say, here, build the damn websites?
Well, that's a very interesting point, and I've not heard it made. I've also not heard them defend it from the point of view that it was never supposed to be that way. I think somebody might try and pick that one apart. But I think it's a valid.
I've had people
point.
Calling into this program today. I'm asking people, what's your experience? Every single person who's called in with a complaint has been from a red state that doesn't have an exchange. Every single person who has called from a blue state that does have an exchange has said, you know, yeah, maybe I had a few glitches here or there. Or it took 10 minutes or I had to make a phone call. But ultimately, they got what they wanted. They got a lower price. They got the insurance. They had no problem, basically.
Wow, that's so interesting.
It is night and day. It is night and day. I've been doing it for 2 hours here, Victoria. I wish you could sit next to me. Somebody should be writing this story.
That's so interesting. Now, I have heard from hosts in Vermont, liberal hosts in Vermont, that there are problems in Vermont.
Well, there's problems everywhere, but that doesn't mean that people can't get through and they don't get a better deal with Obamacare.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, there's I still have problems with my Mac operating system. It does, you know, there's nothing's perfect, right?
This is true.
Yeah.
And they just haven't handled it terribly well, in the same way that Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, isn't handling well the frankly necessity for her to go before the Energy and Commerce Committee on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a smart move to do it.
Yeah.
Rather than going to Phoenix.
Why is she not?
She's going to be in Phoenix. Well, what is more important? You've got a $1 trillion, whatever it is, healthcare initiative, or you can go to Phoenix.
Right.
Or
well, I'm guessing
Phoenix
that she's a.
And
I'm guessing she's. Is this a House committee?
It's a House committee. Yes.
Well, then the Republicans are going to be grandstanding. They're going to be asking gotcha questions.
Yes, they are. It's going to be very unpleasant. But she's now saying that she is available to testify. She's just not available this week. They're going to send a sacrificial lamb.
Oh, no.
Instead.
Oh, that's sad.
I think it is.
Yeah. Okay. So what else is going on?
It just doesn't think it's well handled. Well, very interesting story now developing out of France where documents from Edward Snowden showing that the NSA just over a month spied on 70 million French telephone records, not only terrorism-related, interestingly, seems that they were also going after business-related, also people who might have been in their administration. They took a vacuum cleaner approach. Prominent figures in the world of business, politics, or the French administration. 70 million communications. The French have gone sacré bleu about it. They summoned the U.S. ambassador. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, arrived in France today. He's meeting with the foreign minister tomorrow. So I would expect that to be a very lively meeting.
Yes.
He says protecting people's security in today's world is a very complicated, very challenging task, but was designed to protect U.S. citizens. And he called France one of our oldest allies in the world.
Well, they are. They financed the Revolutionary War. What does Sacre Bleu mean?
Sacre Bleu?
Yes.
It means sort of like sacred blue, but it sort of just means what the...
Yeah, or good God, that kind of thing, yeah. Okay. Victoria Jones. It sounded like sacred blue, and I couldn't figure out. There's probably some interesting epistemology to that. Anyhow, Victoria Jones, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
TalkRadioNews.com, GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, free-don.org. Check it out. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, welcome to our newest Tom Hartman Program affiliate, WBAI, Free Speech Radio, 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio, New York City, carrying us live. The Tea Party is nothing new. This, you know, of all the messages... Everybody said, oh, the Tea Party, this was a brand new thing. This guy who was standing in the Chicago Board of Exchange, he's going to Santinelli. What is it? Rick Santinelli is some guy with an Italian name. And he says, we need a Tea Party. You know, no, there's nothing new about this. The activism that we're seeing from the Tea Party radicals in Washington and, frankly, all around the country today, and especially down in the South, is just a modern-day reboot of the same government obstructionist strategies that have, frankly, been around since the early days when there was a pushback against slavery. President John Adams, the second president of the United States, he had a son, John Quincy Adams. John Quincy Adams became, I think, the sixth president of the United States. I'd have to go through the count of my fingers. But after he ended his presidency, he went back and ran for the House of Representatives so that in the 1830s he could be a congressman and battle slavery. That's what John Quincy Adams did. And that was in the 1830s. And there was like this really, I mean, you know, the founding generation was dead. And there was this huge battle going on over slavery that led right straight to the Civil War. And it led right straight to the first big primary emergence of what we, you know, those of us of a certain age would remember as the Klan. And today you could call the Tea Party. From the battles over segregation and discrimination in the 50s and 60s. To the war on voting rights that's being pushed by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and state capitals all across our nation today. These Tea Party-esque strategies and their values have repeatedly, throughout American history, over and over and over again, they keep rearing their ugly heads. Great article in Salon magazine, Salon.com. Chuck Thompson wrote this thing. It went up, I think, yesterday. And it says, just to quote a little bit from Chuck Thompson, because he says it so eloquently. He says, quote, you know, today's Tea Party strategy is, quote, the same old obstructionist strategy that's been pursued by traitorous Southerners in government since long before Robert E. Lee's doomed charge at Gettysburg. Thompson says it's part of the same soiled fabric that stretches from John C. Calhoun and South Carolina's 1832 Ordinance of Nullification all the way to the Newt Gingrich-led government shutdown. End of quote. I mean, this is the bottom line. Today's Tea Party is the 21st century incarnation of the angry 19th century, 1800s, white male Confederates who wanted to secede from the United States and start their own dysfunctional country based on a plantation economy. So here's an idea. Maybe we should let them do it. In fact, maybe we should make it easier for them. Make it easier for Ted Cruz and Michelle Bachmann and the rest of their Tea Party friends who are all freaked out about, we got a black president in the White House and he's a socialist. Maybe he's from Kenya and he's Muslim. Come on. Just let them start their own plantation economy style country. Or maybe we should just leave them behind and the blue states should secede. This idea, by the way, of the northern industrialized states seceding from the rest of the country, saying, hey, you guys with your slavery and your Jim Crow laws and your literacy test to vote and all of you guys are crazy. We're leaving. This is nothing new. Back in 1814, 1815, the Hartford Convention took place. In Hartford, Connecticut, a group of people met to discuss their growing grievances that were actually provoked by the War of 1812 and their disagreements over slavery. Those at the convention were discussing, they discussed changing policies like the Three-Fifths Compromise, which even though slaves couldn't vote, three-fifths of them were counted for purposes of representation in Congress so that the slave states would have more power in Congress. And they also came up with the idea that there should be a two-thirds supermajority for the admission of new states, for declarations of war, got that, and for any laws restricting trade. Now, ultimately, the New England secession collapsed. Didn't happen. They got drowned out by the moderates. And that all that talk of northern secession was dropped. But do you think it's possible it's time for a new Hartford Convention? What would an America free of Southern lunacy and Tea Party radicalism look like? I mean, first, the disastrous... I mean, just consider, if we could reinvent America, if we could say, okay, we are going to leave behind the mistakes that we've made, and we're going to reboot this country. First thing, in my opinion, that we should do is we should say the Supreme Court, actually I'd blow out the whole judicial review thing, but short of that, at least say Citizens United is toast. I mean, in the modern 21st century America, you'd think it would be fairly clear that corporations are not actually people and that money is property, it's not speech. Similarly, we should say, you know, billionaires, you want to buy politicians? I mean, the McCutcheon case, is it McCutcheon? McCutcheon, that was argued before the Supreme Court last week about how billionaires should be able to buy even more politicians than they can right now. And Scalia's like, yeah, what, $3 million, that's nothing. Right? I think in the new America, we would say politicians can't buy politicians. Billionaires can't buy politicians. In fact, maybe we'd even say no more billionaires. Go to nobillionaires.com. You can check it out. Well, let's have a wealth tax so that the billionaires can't continue to corrupt democracy in our political process. And then consider all the incredibly destructive policy decisions that came along with Ronald Reagan and the so-called Reagan Revolution. He stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. Let's put it back into place. So that shopping centers all over America are now filled once again with small local businesses. The downtowns are small local businesses. So there isn't a McDonald's or a Taco Bell or a Dairy Queen or a Olive Garden or a Macy's on every corner, that every store is locally owned. Let's reboot the fairness doctrine so that the media actually has to cover the news instead of programming infotainment to increase profits. Let's eliminate disastrous trade policies like NAFTA and the WTO. Yeah, I know those happened during the Clinton administration. The real push for it started, though, during the Reagan administration. Let's go back to the protectionist tariff-based trade policies that George Washington put into place and Ronald Reagan began taking apart. And the Medicare eligibility age at 65 right now, you got the Pete Petersons of the world saying, let's raise it up to 67, right? Let's lower it to zero, to birth. If you're born, you immediately get Medicare. Instant national single-payer healthcare system. John Conyers has been pushing this for years. It's a piece of legislation. It's like 2 pages long. I mean, it's just very simple. Everybody's eligible for Medicare, period. End of discussion. If we could accomplish this, America would reflect a 21st century vision of what I believe are actually the ideals and visions of many of, at least the more progressive among the founders. Go read Thomas Paine's Agrarian Justice sometime. If it takes the secession of blue state America to achieve this, so be it. Time to let the small-minded bigots go back to their plantation-style economies and run their states like third world countries while the rest of us get moving on creating a perfect union and looking out for the general welfare of the United States.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, like it says in the preamble to the Constitution. What a novel idea. Anyhow, what do you think? Should we secede? We'd leave behind a lot of good people. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Susan, listening. Oh, hey, well, actually, KBCS is carrying us during the breaks, too, isn't it? Susan, you're on the air in Port Orchard, Washington.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. I called actually to respond to something you talked fairly early in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was,
that's fine.
I don't, maybe I misunderstood during the time of that the Obamacare, or excuse me, Affordable Health Care Act was assigned into law, but I thought that these state exchanges were the result of kind of a compromise with the Republican side, because I felt as a Democrat that, and I really had hoped that we could have gotten the single care, I mean the single payer system, and that this, you know, the state exchanges was really kind of in response to the Republican side of the aisle. Am I right, or can you clarify me on that?
I don't know, Susan. I was paying attention pretty good back when they were hammering the law out, but not at that micro level of detail.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Democrats, the big cave-in that they gave to the Republicans was not having a public option, you know, and not having the federal government compete with any of the insurance companies. And I think that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, that's right.
And my understanding is that with RomneyCare in Massachusetts, they actually have a public option that competes with the health insurance companies, although I could be wrong. I've had several callers tell me that.
Yeah, I would certainly prefer that. And I also felt that the reason, I mean, I was reading too much into it, but I felt that the reason they were doing these health insurance exchanges was to bring people on board because they wanted to continue. The insurance companies wanted to still be part of the whole program, whereas a single payer, the insurance companies would be out of work or something.
Yeah.
So I felt that.
Well, that was the whole original idea. I mean, when Obama was campaigning for president in 2000, and when he was campaigning for United States Senator, he was campaigning on a single payer system. And then when he was campaigning in 2000, he was aggressively campaigning for, you know, RomneyCare plus a public option. And then once he became president and saw what he could get through Congress and what he couldn't get through Congress, and especially after Scott Brown got sworn in and he lost that, you know, little, I think it was 13 weeks he had a filibuster-proof Senate. And then when Scott Brown got sworn in to replace Teddy Kennedy, he lost that. And you had that Republican conspiracy from the caucus room restaurant, you know, that group with Paul Ryan and Jim DeMint, all those guys who swore basically a blood oath that they'd do everything they could to break him, was Jim DeMint's phrase. Pete Sessions called it the Taliban insurgency. And, you know, what came out of that was that Obamacare is a far more conservative Republican program. I mean, it was originally written by the Heritage Foundation. You know, it was put into place in Massachusetts by Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney tried to run on it when he was running for the Republican presidential primary in 2000 on the fact that he had done RomneyCare. And, of course, then Obama came in and got Obamacare through. And so in 2008,
I'm mixing my years up here, aren't I? In 2008, Romney wanted to run on that, and he didn't. But in 2012, he couldn't run on it anymore because in the 2012 election, Obama had already done Obamacare. So that was, now I got my years right. Anyhow, Susan, I don't know the details of exactly why, but thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing it. And thanks for listening to KBCS. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Harmon here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. And, oh, interesting. I wonder if the, well, Howard in Chicago. Hey, Howard. It says you're listening on our website.
I got through. Yeah, I just wanted, there's like maybe two things if there's time I'd like to mention. One is earlier you spoke with a woman, I think she said she was vegan in mid-50s, and talking about her premium prices. I think you said that maybe she could have got assistance from Medicaid if the Republicans hadn't sabotaged it. I just wanted to help clarify, because I've done some work on this here in Chicago for podcasts and other things for foundations, that Medicaid is designed by the ACA to cover those who make 138% or less of the federal poverty line, which is a very low 11,000 and change.
Uh-huh.
And they're excluded from the healthcare exchange. They cannot participate at that level. So they're supposed, if the state has allowed them, they're eligible for Medicaid, mostly in blue states and not in most of the red states. However, the cost sharing, so Medicaid is not going to help anyone on the ACA health exchange. I just wanted to be clear about that.
Okay.
The premium subsidies are eligible for those who make 138% to 400% of the federal poverty level.
Right.
And that's for premiums only.
Right.
And then for those who make 138 to 250% of the federal poverty level, they may be eligible for cost sharing, which should help them pay for, it's really kind of fuzzy, they haven't published good information on it, should help them pay some of the actual health costs that they will incur. So, I mean, but I think that's, so I just wanted to clarify.
Sure.
Medicaid.
Now, let me clarify part of your clarification, Howard. If
yeah.
my understanding of what happened in Vermont is correct, and I used to live there and three of my kids still do.
Right.
They have signed up over 50,000 people for the Medicaid expansion through the Vermont Health Exchange, or through the Oregon Health Exchange, whatever it's called, through the website, which is the same website that you sign up for Obamacare on. So while you're not technically signing up for Obamacare, the Medicaid expansion was part of that same piece of legislation, and you sign up for it using, or at least initially access it, using the same state websites.
That's absolutely correct, because when the first step that's done is to qualify you for income as well as citizenship, et cetera.
Right.
And what it does is it basically channels you either into Medicaid enrollment or into ACA enrollment,
right.
Unless your income exceeds that. But so yeah,
in the states that took the Medicaid
step, that's the first step that all of the websites and including healthcare.gov should do. But what it's basically doing is splitting everyone on either side of the 138% line,
mm-hmm.
pushing those below into the Medicaid enrollment, pushing those above into the health exchange.
Is that a federal number, or is that vary state by state?
It will happen. But Medicaid itself does not subsidize anything on the health exchange. It simply enrolls those who are
okay.
Income as
well. Yeah, thanks for the clarification, Medicaid. Howard. Is the poverty line, is that poverty number a federal poverty number, or does it vary state by state?
It's $15,282 in Illinois. Traditionally, I think you're right. It may vary by state. What the ACA did do, which was an improvement, places like Tennessee with the notorious 10 care actually disenrolled hundreds of thousands of people from Medicaid in the last few years by lowering their threshold to 50% of the already low federal poverty level.
Hey.
So unless you made about $5,500 a year, you couldn't get Medicaid. They dumped people with dialysis and HIV out into the streets without even Medicaid.
That's
the ACA does require all states, although the states aren't required to give them Medicaid at all,
right.
to do that at 138% of the poverty level. But since the states can't be compelled to do that, it's kind of a wash.
Right.
I think you are correct that probably the actual dollar amount may vary from state to state.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Howard, for that. I appreciate it. I'm still learning this stuff, too. Stephen in Pittsburgh, New York. Hey, Stephen, what's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You had mentioned treating corporations as people, which is one of my favorite topics because I love seeing conservatives' head explode. When you say this, if you want a corporation to be a person so bad, tax them like a person.
There you go.
And if you want to do that, then you have to have the same, you know, highest tax rate as a high-salaried, high-income individual.
Yeah.
And that argument I've never heard made before. I don't understand it because it's such a great retort. Maybe you have some insight into that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, usually people say, yeah, you know, I believe a person is a corporation when one goes to jail or, you know, when one, you know, dies or when one whatever. But, you know, yeah, okay, Mitt Romney, if you think that your corporation is a person, let it pay the same taxes as everybody else. Brilliant. Stephen, thank you for the call. Diana in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to thank you for your clarification on the blue state, red state thing with the Obamacare. And, you know, the media should be doing this.
I don't understand why they're not. But I also, you know, in the first few days of the government shutdown, I didn't understand why the big corporate media machine wasn't saying John Boehner could end this shutdown tomorrow by simply allowing the House of Representatives to vote on whether or not to end it, because there were 20 Republicans who were on the record that they'd vote to end it. And it only took 17 Republicans plus all the Democrats. But the media was not reporting that, with a few rare exceptions. And most Americans never knew that. But then it turns out that the media made tens of millions of dollars in additional profits by that spectacle. And I'm beginning to wonder if this is the new spectacle that they're going to make money off of to get eyeballs to watching their shows.
Well, they don't do their job. You know, they want to promote, you know, avarice, greed. You know, their arrogance is exceeded by their ignorance, or the other way around. And shame on those people. I want to say that. Shame on those Fox News and Hannity people. Because when I listen to you and I want to, you know, join with your other viewers and supporters in saying that you're right, we can reinvent America. This is our world, and we can take it back. Mm. And I hope that, you know, I hope that what they have done only serves to bring more people over to our side, you know, away from the flat earthers and into what I call simanity.
There you go. Diana, thank you very much for the call. And thanks for watching in Vancouver, Washington. We'll be right back. It is 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option. You know, the best cure for depression or despair is action. Get out there, do something. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We've got some more ACA stories. And will Ted Cruz run for president? He was born in Canada. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us. Tangled in my wires. Okay, Brian in Dunkirk, Indiana. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Yes, slightly off topic, but not too much. Ted Cruz ran the charge to do away with Obamacare. But I've heard rumblings on corporate television that he's going to make a presidential run. And isn't he born Canadian?
Yes, he was born in Canada, and his father was a Cuban citizen. And but see, the Republicans are now saying, or at least the Tea Partiers are now saying, that natural born citizen means that one of your parents was an American citizen, and his mother was an American citizen. So they have changed their tune. Of course, he's a white guy.
But it was different with the birthers, right?
It was different when it was the black guy. Yeah.
Come up. Yeah.
It was a whole different thing.
The Democratic birthers come out and say, I want to see your birth certificate, Ted Cruz, you know.
Well, he's released it, you know. Oh, there's Oh Canada. Yes, thank you. The Canadian National Anthem. Yeah. Thank you, Shano. No, he actually has released his birth certificate, Brian, to show that he was born in Canada, I guess. I don't get it. But he's very unambiguously running for president. He is filling the hole that was left by the departure of Ron Paul, and he got there before Rand did. And Rand is probably not happy about that, but who knows. Brian, thanks a lot for the call. George in Eureka, California. Hey, George, what's up?
Oh, Tom, I found
the part of the Constitution that the Tea Party patriots and Karl Rove have been quoting from. I didn't realize until I looked in my 1977 encyclopedia that it happens to be the Confederate Constitution.
What part would that be?
That would be the actual elimination of any infrastructure in the society that is being governed.
Really? I'm going to have to look up the can you quote me chapter and verse, or are you just telling me about it?
My encyclopedia is very short.
I see. Okay. I'm going to have to look up the Confederate Constitution. That sounds fascinating. Okay, George, thank you very much for the call. Keith in Bentonville, Arkansas. The boy, that's the belly of the beast. That's the headquarters of Walmart. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Tom. Nice talking to you again. This is the second time I've called in. The phones were busy today. Boy, I had a hard time getting through. I was wanting to call about Obamacare in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas got a Medicare waiver. We've got a Democratic governor and a Republican state legislature. So the only way that they would take the Medicare money is they struck a deal that all of the, we're taking the Medicare money, but it has to be used through private insurance for people who qualify, who would have qualified for Medicare.
Right. It was a kind of, let's pump it, let's money launder it through the private industry. And then also, I'm looking at the Kaiser Family Foundation. The state-based marketplace doesn't take effect until July 1st, 2015. So if you're in Arkansas, you're signing up through the federal database, which is going to be clunky.
Right. And they did do something good, though. They got a website out there called arhealthconnector.org, and mm-hmm. they've been advertising that and pumping that, getting the word out. And it's pretty user-friendly. It answers a lot of your questions before it then takes you to healthcare.gov to fill out.
Oh, interesting.
Everything.
Okay. So it's a start. They're basically, it's an informational website, though, as opposed to, you know, the really heavy lifting, the database stuff, you know.
Right.
Cool.
It's definitely a start. And I think what we're going to see after all this gets up and running by January is that we're going to have a whole lot of different states with different levels of good or bad.
Yep. I'm waiting for that. You know, I've been talking about this for weeks on this program, and the calls that I'm getting are validating it. The people in the red states are having problems and finding high expenses. People in blue states are not having problems, and they're having low expenses. And it has to do with whether the state set up an exchange and whether the state took the Medicaid money. And if the states did those two things that are provided for in Obamacare, even though the Supreme Court said you don't have to, if the state did those two things, people seem to be having a very pleasant experience. And I'm waiting for the news media to pick this up, because I think this is the big unreported story. Keith, thanks a lot for the call. Justin in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Justin, you had an experience with the ACA?
Yeah, I did, actually, in regards to my mom. I had several, but my mom was struck home, obviously, because she's my mother. About a year and a half ago, she lost her job of 27 years. The company went under, basically due to the Bush recession. And we couldn't find her private health insurance, you know, because she's a breast cancer survivor, and she's also survived multiple reoccurrences of malignant melanoma. So
yikes.
I went and shopped around everywhere, and I couldn't even get the companies to take her with a user medical plan with a $10,000 deductible. They said no way. So she was forced onto COBRA. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with COBRA, but if the mass populace isn't, you know, it is basically you have to buy the same exact insurance policy through COBRA that your former employer provided you.
Right. And interestingly enough, the COBRA law was pushed through by Reagan, or during the Reagan administration.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And then it expires, because I was on COBRA for a while.
It's 18 months, but in her case, she had a Cadillac plan from her former company.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to buy the same policy for her. Now, she doesn't have a job. She did get a severance package, not a golden parachute or nothing, but it turned out it was $1,815 a month to get a number for the last about 15 months. And fortunately, through her savings and then, you know, her severance package, we've been able to afford it to get her to the ACA.
Right.
So when the ACA came out, you know, October 1st, I was one of the guys at midnight, you know, trying to find this. And, you know, we got through. Everything was pretty good. California works really smoothly. We got her onto a platinum plan. And depending on whether they consider her annuity that she's using to live on now until she turns 65 to get Social Security, is considered income. Right now, we're looking at about $360 a month for the Platinum plan, the top
wow.
plan they have.
So,
and, you know, it was so paramount because, you know, I mean, obviously being a cancer survivor, but then having reoccurrences of multiple ones, especially with her skin cancer,
right.
is really frightening. I'm like, you know, Mom, we have to pay for this no matter what, no matter how. We got to figure it out because you can't go without
it. So just again, Justin, your mom's cost went from what to what because of the affordable?
It went from $1,815 a month to, depending on how they judge her annuity income, between $350 to $500 for the Platinum plan.
Wow.
The very top plan they have.
That's
and
incredible.
My mom's like, oh, my God. She was like, I can finally, like, you know, go places and do things because, you know, that was all of her money.
Yeah.
Most people don't even.
So, you know, and once again, you're in California, right?
Yeah, no, we're in California. It works,
yeah.
so, it works really smooth.
Yeah, California set up an exchange and took the Medicaid expansion money. And this is what I keep saying. Thank you, Justin, for the call. We have a corporate news media in this country that is not interested in reporting the news. They're interested in spectacle. They're interested in making money. It's all about profit. It's all about the bottom line. And, you know, they tried to get us into the war in Syria. Hey, spectacle, wouldn't that be cool? Trayvon Martin, spectacle, wasn't that cool? Rapist guy with three women in his house for 10 years, spectacle. Every time this happens, every time you get a good spectacle going, the profits of the for-profit news media go up, especially the television ones. And that's my theory of why they never reported that John Boehner could have stopped the shutdown of the government on day one. And all he had to do was let the House of Representatives vote on it, because there were more than 17 Republicans who would have voted to end the shutdown. And ultimately, more than 20 of them did vote to end the shutdown. I think it was closer to 50 or 60, something like that. And I think that this is the new spectacle. Obamacare is terrible because the exchange isn't working. And the reality of the matter is that the reason the exchange isn't working is because the exchange, the healthcare.gov, the website, was set up to be a portal. It was supposed to be like Google. You know, you plug in, you know, the information you're looking for, and it points you out to other websites. It was supposed to be, you go to the federal government, to healthcare.gov, you plug in your Social Security number, your age, and your address. It confirms who you are and that you are a citizen and eligible for health care. And then it drops you into the state in which you live. And that state exchange then, you know, say that again. Oh, yeah. And then that state knows what the requirements are. And so that state then says, you know, okay, we're going to. Here's the details. We've got the database. We know what the requirements are. We know what the eligibility is, all that other kind of stuff. And instead, because 36 states have said, no, we're not going to set up these exchanges, and over 25 states have said, no, we're not going to take the Medicaid money, all of these state-by-state idiosyncrasies and peculiarities are having to be handled by the one single healthcare.gov federal website. And I don't know why the president doesn't just come out and say this, other than the fact that he's very averse to blaming other people. He's very into just taking responsibility and fixing things. But this is Republican sabotage. And it's not just Republican sabotage. It's billionaires who all have health insurance driving this sabotage. And all these Republican legislators who all have health insurance, and all these think tanks that provide Cadillac health insurance policies to their people who have health insurance, all of them pushing for people, particularly poor people, particularly working poor and working people in so-called red states, not to have health insurance. And now they're going into campuses trying to convince students not to have health insurance. It's insane. Up next, Shano and Danielle.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I got to boogie out of here for just a second. We will be right back.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Shano and Danielle sitting in for Tom just for this very last segment. As Tom said just before
He had to take off. He has an interview he had to do. He rarely does this, but we're very happy to sit in. Actually, we're going to have the callers, I think, take over, Danielle. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. You'll
do a great job filling in.
Yeah. Tom has the smartest listeners in the entire world, so of course.
Yeah. And you've already talked to all these people, so you're going to know what order and exactly what they're going to say. So it's like you have ESP. You know exactly what's coming up next, so why don't we get to it?
Yes. We're going to start with Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois. Marty, you are on the air. Hi, Marty.
Hey, guys. How are you guys? Good to be talking to you and Shano. I just wanted to first off extend my condolences to the to those affected by that middle school shooting in Nevada earlier today. And so, you know, it's such a tragedy that shootings like that still continue and persist. So hopefully we can actually get something sensible going with that kind of stuff. But I wanted to call because Tom was mentioning earlier about the North seceding, and I was thinking that if climate change keeps going the way it's going, the South is going to be uninhabitable regardless. So I think it's going to be a mass migration anyway.
Yeah.
Mother Nature may make the South secede naturally, just all on its own. It's just going to evaporate.
Exactly. But, hey, we could be the new South. There could be a new Northern Territory at the rate we're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty funny point, Marty, as usual.
Although not that funny at all.
Funny about global warming, but about the South seceding. And, all the more reason why people need to check out Tom's great new documentary, Last Hours, which you can check out at lasthours.org. Thank you very much, Marty. And
thank you, guys.
We'll go to Betty in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, Betty.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Betty.
Good afternoon, both of you. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to throw out another thing out there that might be influential in this website mess. I've read countless articles over the years about how inferior our internet system is compared to modern countries like Japan,
right,
where the quality, where they pay pennies on the dollar for a superior quality and speed that's something, if I recall correctly, something like 6-7 times the speed that we're getting over here.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering why most Americans don't figure that this could have been a big influence in this.
It could be, especially, you know, we had some callers, I think, from France a month or so ago,
yeah,
where Tom went into great depth. I mean, Tom tends to talk about our internet infrastructure is, you know, third world infrastructure with monopolists that own it, essentially. So, and the service we get is third rate, and we spend a lot for it. You have countries like South Korea who are updating to the highest level possible, and I'm sure that while the system and the website itself is having problems, that internet speed and internet connectivity is probably adding to it. I would imagine there are a number of different issues that are causing this problem with healthcare.gov.
Yeah.
One of them that Tom's been talking about all day today, I personally have experienced this, you know, having gone to the Maryland website and signed up myself. I mean, I watched on Hannity where they were going to South Carolina and said, well, why don't we try it in a blue state? And lo and behold, it was far, far better. So one of the factors is going to be which state it is. Another factor is there's going to be a few flaws when you have 50 million lines of code. Another factor is going to be the speed of the internet. But it still doesn't mean that, you know, it still means that what Tom is talking about, I think, is one of the main factors as well. Don't you, Danielle?
Absolutely. It, you know, to develop a project this big, anybody who has, you know, developed a very basic, simple template of a website understands how difficult
it is. This isn't just a WordPress. This is not a WordPress template here.
Exactly. And this is such a complicated project. And then it's just further confounded by states throwing a wrench in the mix and saying, you know, we're not going to cooperate. We're not going to include our own state databases, right, and our own state exchanges.
And there are ways you can just be plain old difficult. And because if you've got to interface all these databases, they've got to talk to each other in similar languages. Now, I know there are IT people out there that can use all of the technical terms, but they have to talk to one another. And when there's difficulty talking to one another, for example, if you have a state that's being obstructionist, it doesn't give you all of the ins and outs and the nooks and crannies of the site, those connectivity problems then drop you. Then there's website problems. Then you have to have a coder come in and then redo it. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here.
Right. And a lot of these state databases, these Medicaid databases, you know, income verification databases, they're not well maintained in the states themselves.
Sure.
These are states that don't spend a lot of money on their own infrastructure, on their own social programs.
Right.
So the product that
because they've cut business taxes back so far.
Exactly. The product that they're starting out with that now healthcare.gov has to communicate with is already an inferior product.
That's Excellent. Excellent point.
Yes.
Excellent point.
Yes. So do we have time for another call?
Yeah.
All right. We will talk to Richard, calling from Munster, Indiana, listening on WCPT. You are on the air, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I had another Cobra story. This one's a little bit different. My wife did not have the premium or the platinum plan. She had a very austere plan, which had $12,000 deductible.
Wow.
And she was paying $940 for both of us. I finally bailed out and went to a different place. But here's my story. I had gone. My doctor sent me to get a CT scan because I had a problem where I had a malignant melanoma one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I go and get it scheduled through the local hospital. And a week later, I get a call from the insurance company saying, well, wait a minute, they charge $1,000. We can get it much cheaper, 20 miles away. And I said, well, geez, the hospital's a mile away. But mm-hmm. there's another.
You got a point here, real quick.
Yeah, Richard,
10,
we just have a few seconds.
So the end of the show is going to cut you off. So you're fine.
Well, anyway, the story is that it wound up that the my copay was $900 and some because the cost of the CT scan was $1,500, not $500, where they wanted me to go.
Okay. Well, Richard, thank you very much. I think that the point Richard was trying to make is essentially that the insurance we're dealing with now is already pretty bad. So we may be having some technical glitches, but this is an improvement,
is
and we're getting somewhere.
Right.
We're moving forward.
Well, thanks so much, everyone, for sticking around. Tom will be back tomorrow. And remember, participation, you got to do it. Tag, you're it. We will see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.